Okay. And so with that said, let's get the ball rolling. So peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome everyone to this week's Black Wallets Matter Town Hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be hosting this evening's call. So, you know, I want to go over some of the ground rules, how we operate these calls so that everything will flow smooth. So I hope you guys are feeling empowered and inspired tonight. We have a lot of brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of, you know, working towards solutions to problems in the Black community. So if you notice, when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister. And the reason we do that is to show respect and to show a sign of solidarity. During these calls, we don't discuss religion. We don't discuss the Black male and female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to Black people in America, how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into arguments about which party did this or which party didn't do that, because these are all opinion-based topics, and you know, no one is right, no one is wrong. We'll be going around and around in a circle all night. So for all the guests on the call, so, you know, we consider you a guest if you are not yet a member of Black Wallets Matter. So for all the guests on the call, let me tell you a little bit about this organization. If you haven't watched the blueprint yet, as I said, Black Wallets Matter is a member association. It is comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in the Black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the Black dollars we already have. Excuse me. It is estimated that we spent $1.3 trillion last year. So if we were to pool our resources and practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. This is the essence of Black capitalism. A lot of people like to talk about that, and you know, how we need to have businesses and different things and how we need to circulate our money. That's essentially the system that we are in here in America is a capitalistic one, and we need to learn the rules of that game so that we could thrive and prosper. The purpose of the member association is to bring together like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in the Black community and are motivated to take action. So what you have to understand is that the injustices and some of the other problems that we face, they are systematic problems. And so when you have a systematic problem, you need a systematic solution. And that's what this organization is about. We are working on implementing a system that works without, use our existing behavior and without very much effort from the vast majority of us. So we will require founding members, and I'll get into that in a moment, but we are going to have to be the ones to create this system, and so it's going to require a lot of work, it's going to require a lot of sacrificing, but once the system is in place, it will just start working to our benefit and counteract some of the oppressive systems that are in place today. So, I want to just ask you guys, you know, you think to yourself, you know, we sit around and we talk about these problems all the time, and, we have 50 million ways to describe ourselves, our religions, our different beliefs, you know, whether we're Black, whether we're not Black, whether we're a community, whether we're not a community, all these different things. I think all these points of division cause us problems, and we're just talking, but we're never actually getting anything done. And personally, I am tired of talking. The members, so we have 311 members, actually two more today, so 313. So we have 313 members who are sick and tired of the talking and are ready to actually do something. And so I want to ask everyone on this call tonight, to yourself, when will enough be enough for you? When will you be ready to, you know, stop talking and ready to take action? Now, we know, in order for you to take action, you want to take the right action. You want to make sure that you're working with a system or working with a plan that is, you know, going to produce the results. But the thing about it is, right, so you got to understand we're trying to do something new here. And we have a lot of challenges that we have to overcome as black folks. One of the main ones that we have to overcome is learning to work together. We have to learn to agree to disagree. We have to learn how to argue without burning the house down, without walking away. We have to put the overall goal, we have to keep that top of mind, and we have to keep working towards that constantly, you know, and despite our differences. So the overall goal of this organization is to realistically change the economic, political, and social conditions of black people here in America. It's going to take a generation or two to achieve that goal. So in essence, what we're doing, we are working for our children. We are trying to build something for our children. We are trying to leave a legacy. That is essentially, we had a members call Tuesday, and the sister, you know, after the call, she said, you know what, so essentially what we're doing is we're doing this for the babies, right? And I said, yeah, I was like, that's really what it is. Now, it's complicated because of all the things that we're up against. It's going to be complex. We're doing things that we have never done. We don't have all the answers as of yet. But the blueprint provides a pretty solid groundwork, a pretty solid blueprint or roadmap for how we could get there. Now, the you know, they say the devil is in the details. Right, we are going to have to figure out the details, and that is the sacrifice that you and I and the other 311, the 313 brothers and sisters, we're going to have to make that if we are going to see change. The best that I'm hoping for is to actually see things taking, like to see the change in progress, to see like these young black men and women making better decisions, to see them on, you know, better financial footing. Maybe I will not be able to enjoy it, but that's okay. As long as my children and my grandchildren, as long as I'm able to see that, then that is what that's what we're working for. And we're working for building a legacy. If that does not resonate with you, unfortunately at this time, we have really nothing else to offer. Because this organization is not about self-enrichment. So this is not, hey, what can we do today to make like $1 million tomorrow for myself? Like to be, you know, personally. We're saying, what can we do today that's going to change situations for tomorrow and all the tomorrows to come for future generations of black people? Like I said, so it's going to require a sacrifice. And we want, like I said, we want to leave it better for them. And then more importantly, once these children start making better decisions, start being more productive members of society, they're still going to be some racists. That's just the way that America is. There are going to be some people who will target them. And so we need to put protections in place for these children, and that includes legal and political influence. And so those are some of the things that we're working towards. And I'll break that down, exactly how this organization will take care of these things. So when I say we're going to use the power of our black wallets, that is to make America stand up and understand that we are organized and that we are serious. It doesn't necessarily mean spending money in every case. It could mean withholding money from people that do not respect or agree with our best interests. So we could withhold our patronage. We are the biggest spenders in the American economy, even though we're not the majority of the of the population. So you can believe if we decided to boycott certain businesses, it would have a major impact on the U.S. economy. And like I said, realistically, that's the kind of action that it's going to take. So just imagine if, like, every time one of our unarmed brothers and sisters got killed and we banded together and killed off one of their businesses, they would wake up and they would know, they would stop messing with us. And so I want you guys to let the impact of that sink in for a minute, because America fully understands economics, and until we show them that we understand how it works too, they're not going to stop messing with us. So like I said, everyone, most people who are concerned about what's going on in the black community, they have like their own ideas of how they want to solve the problems, things like that. I just want you to know, so we've been together 6 months now. This organization, we have our direction. We have our plan. It's laid out in a blueprint. And the organization the priorities that we have will be to address black poverty, which affects over 70% of single black mothers, black unemployment and underemployment, which affects us at 50% as compared to 9% for whites and other, probably less for other ethnicities, in this wave of racially motivated police brutality. So that, that pertains to the protections that I was saying that we're going to need for these children. And the way that we plan on achieving these goals is through this member association, and we collect membership dues. We are not a nonprofit organization. We will be structured as a benefit corporation, which is a B Corp. Benefit corporations are businesses that exist for the sole purpose of helping a particular group of people. So Black Wallets Matter exists for the sole purpose of conducting business to help the black community. Like I said, we're not an investor group. There's a lot of regulations and things and bureaucracy associated with those types of entities. And realistically, in order for us to move fast and move forward, we do not need that type of red tape. We don't need to be hamstringed, while we're trying to do what it is that we want to do. So the membership levels that I've discussed, memberships start at $10 a month for the silver level, $25 a month at the gold level, and $50 a month at the platinum level. Now, our overall goal within the next 3 to 5 years is to get 1 million association members. With 1 million members, this organization will generate over $300 million a year in revenue. That type of revenue will allow us to get a $1 or $2 billion loan. So the things that we want to do with that type of money, the reason why we need to be thinking in the billions is because we want to buy large-scale businesses such as manufacturing plants and supermarket chains and transportation companies and things like that. We want to employ hundreds and thousands and possibly, well, actually, that's the goal, to employ thousands of our brothers and sisters. That is the way that we're going to be able to affect poverty and affect, unemployment and underemployment. With the profits from these businesses, with the profit from these businesses, we're going to build community resource centers. Now, this is how we get to the heart of the matter of actually making a change. Most of us who are, like, let's just say, 20 and older, we're pretty much set in our ways. We have like some bad traits as a people. But what we want to do is start changing or redefining what it means to be black for our babies. We want to teach them things like, listen, black people don't kill one another. Black people help one another. Black people save their money and invest. Black people do this. So basically all the negative things that we have, we want to teach our babies the opposite. And I'm very realistic about this. A lot of these children are going to be coming from very difficult home environments. And so that's why we need the community resource center. If there are 1,000 struggling black babies in that community or 5,000, it is our job to save them. It is our job to provide an outlet for them. But the community center will serve a dual purpose. It will also provide training and skill trades like plumbing, electrical, welding, carpentry, things like that. Our brothers and sisters need to get back to having skills again. We're not really known for anything in this country besides entertainment and sports and I don't know, whatever. But that's what we're mainly known for. And we need to be known for something else. A lot of people are experiencing gentrification in their local areas. Well, okay, we may have missed the boat on the investment end, but if we're smart and we start training to become the people who can fix these buildings and things like that, all these new buildings and stuff they're throwing up, they're going to break. They're going to need somebody to fix them. And so if we go in and we start fixing these things, we will have the money to make the investments necessary for the future generation. So that's essentially what we want to do with the profits from the businesses that we buy as an organization. We want our people ready to take advantage of future opportunities in this changing world, because the way that we're going right now, the world is going to leave us. We are going to be left behind. We are at the bottom of the socioeconomic totem pole. I think the only group that is below us are the Native Americans. But like Mexicans and anybody else you can think of that have come to this country within the last 20 years, they have already eclipsed us on the socioeconomic scale. So we really don't have any excuses, right? So then the other portion of the profits will go towards hiring lawyers and lobbyists in Washington to protect and enforce our civil rights. This will make it harder for law enforcement to kill our unarmed brothers and sisters and get away with it. This will make it harder for them to mess with our babies and get away with it. This will make it hard for other people to be out and out racist. Just like the Jewish community, if you say anything, you could actually be giving them a compliment and they will say that you have done something anti-Semitic. They have watchdogs. They have advocates. And that's essentially what we need. We need to make everybody acutely aware that we have organized and that we're not standing when we're not taking it anymore. And that's going to take money, because a lot of these other organizations, these other ethnic and cultural organizations, they spend money for the things that they believe in. You got the NRA, the people who believe in the Second Amendment, believe that they should have guns. I believe that is the strongest lobbyist in Washington. You have AARP, which is for the seniors or whatever. They are very strong. They have a very strong lobby. Obviously, we know the Jewish community has a very large, a strong lobby, and the LGBTQ community. And that's a recent development. And they're plowing millions into their way of life to protect their way of life and to protect the things that they believe. And that's what we have to do. We have to get serious. So I know these are very lofty goals, and it's going to take years of hard work to achieve. But to get the ball rolling and to have a quick win, we have set a current goal by the end of this year, 2,000 founding members. Now, the 2,000 founding members will be the people who will make the sacrifice to create this first beachhead, to create this first example of what we can do as a people coming together. We collect the membership dues from 2,000 founding members, let's say at the very least $10. That will give this organization $20,000 a month. That will allow us to move ahead to our phase, which is creating a shopping portal. If anyone is familiar with Ebates, it is like a cashback site where people shop through it. You go to all your favorite stores or whatever it is, and they pay you back a percentage of the money, and they keep a percentage. They did about $3 billion last year. That's similar to what we want to create. And so that will allow people who are not members of this organization, that will basically allow any black person anywhere on the planet who shops online, that will allow them to be able to support this organization. And that's what we want to build first. That's what the 2,000 founding members will build. It's a selfless act is what's required to get there. But by us creating these things, we are essentially telling our brothers and sisters that we love them even if we don't know them. And that's really what we're going to need as a people if we intend to move, if we plan on moving forward. This will also raise the visibility of the organization and create a snowball effect where more of our brothers and sisters will want to join us and help us build out the next phase of our plan. So this, like I said, so this is a proof element, and the first proof element will be a business. So we haven't reached the 2,000 founding members as of yet. Like I said, we have 311 members. And so we are looking at providing other things of value for members to come on board. So we thought initially at the onset, we thought we would have the 2,000 founding members already, and then we would have been able to fulfill our perks. The perks would have been like things like discount shopping, discount medical, dental, you know, things like that you would get in a union, because that's essentially the model that we're looking at, that this is being set up as. It's being set up as like an African American union or Black People's Union, however you want to, you know, term it. But we have not got the members in as fast as we thought, and so we are looking at other ways of generating revenue in the meantime. And so we have our business directory. It's the Black Wall Street Business Directory. It is, you can go to the website, you can click the menu, you'll see it. If you have a business or something that you would like to promote and you would like to reach our network, we have, 40... like over 40,000 followers on Facebook. We have, we're closing in on about 10,000 people on the email list. We have tens of thousands of people coming to the website each month or whatever. Your business will be showcased there. We also have the Black Wall Street Project itself, which will be some training information with financial literacy and business training. So if you're thinking like you want to start a business and you don't know where to start, we're going to help you do that. And if you currently have a business and you're looking for better ways to get more exposure, let's say online or the network or things like that, those things will be included within the Black Wall Street Project. All right. So in regards to how the membership dues, how the money is managed. So as I said, we have 311 members. We are closing in on break even. So we have been, we're not quite there yet. The organization isn't quite yet meeting, being able to support itself. So, I'm subsidizing whatever needs to be done. I'm subsidizing that from my own pocket. So there is no money to run off with. I post revenue reports and things like that in the private members area. We have a new one that I'm posting this weekend. So for all the members that's on the call, that'll be up this weekend. And for anyone else who's thinking about coming on and you're wondering how the money is being managed, you'll see clearly where the dollars come in and you'll see how the dollars are going out. We spend the vast majority of the money currently on advertising and marketing, and that's to bring in new members. That is how we're able to have these conference calls every week and have new guests on and, are able to expose new members to our message and to our goals and our plans. So that is actually going to be something that we're going to have to keep in place because, like I said, we want to reach 1 million members in the next 3 to 5 years. And so we have to speak to a lot of brothers and sisters, present this organization to them, let them know what it is about, and then, hopefully allow them to join, or sometimes they don't want to join and, they have to come back a few times to make sure that we're for real. So, I say all of this so that, anyone who's worried about like having another Umar Johnson type situation and, thinking that somebody is running off with the money or whatever, I'm just letting you know there's nothing to run off with. So I am the chief cook and bottle washer, Brother Lou. I pretty much, as this organization has grown, I've become really, really tied up with some of the day-to-day operations or whatever it is. But one of the first things that we're looking to do with the revenue is we're looking to hire staff so that there are people who wake up every single day and it is their job to make the Black community a better place. That's one of the other problems that we have. We don't have a group of people who are dedicated to making it better for all of us. Not all of us will be able to actually do something like physically, right? So it's not like we're lifting boxes or anything like that. What we're doing here is we need people who are political strategists. We need attorneys. We need business savvy people, people who have financial experience, things like that, but on a really grand scale. And I want to hire the best and the brightest, because if you look at what's going on in the country, that's how other businesses and other entities, that's how they survive and thrive. They hire the best and the brightest. And that's what we need to do. We need to get serious about this, folks. A lot of people volunteer and they offer their services, but I have been respectfully declining as of late, because like I said, I want to get to the point where we're able to hire staff. That means every single day it is someone's job to make sure that we are moving forward. Back in March, we started at zero. And so, like I said, now we're at like 40,000 followers and likes, or whatever you want to call it, and you know, close to 10,000 people on the email list. So what we are doing is working. When we started, I had family and friends who came on board, and I have since removed them from the numbers, from the membership numbers, so as not to fudge them. So like I said, so we have about 313 members now. And that pretty much sums up what this organization is about. So I want to say to you, if anyone has any questions or comments about what's, you know, about what I said, I'm going to put the call in Q&A mode. And what you can do is press *6 on your phone. You can get in the queue and you can ask me any questions or make any comments that you have. If what I said resonates with you, then I want to invite you to become a member. Like I said, membership dues start at $10, $25, and $50, at the higher levels. And we just last week, a sister asked for a button where people can make a one-time contribution if they wanted to help us reach our financial goals. And so that link is there as well on the website. So if, you know, you're not sure that you want to have a monthly you know, if you're not sure if you want to have a monthly due or whatever it is, you're not sure how your money's going to come in, you can look in the menu. It says make a it says help us reach our financial goals, or make a one-time contribution, something like that. You can click that and you can make a contribution, 5, 10, 15, whatever it is. That was something that was requested by one of our members, and it was seconded by a few others. So I just wanted to let you know about that. So let me put the call in Q&A mode, and you can press *6 when you, okay, wait, we have a few callers that have come in, and I have to tag them, hold on. So caller from Brother Rich, I see you, brother. Just let me just get the names of these other brothers and sisters that came in, so we'll know who we're on the call with. Brother from 213 area code 213-840, brother or sister, caller, your first name, please.
Cecil Robinson.
I'm sorry, brother?
Cecil.
Okay, cool. Brothers, all right, cool. Okay, cool. So for all the people who just came on, just to let you know, if you missed it, we ask for your first name so that we'll know who we're on the line with. We don't want to, we want to be respectful. We want to address you properly. Caller from 469 area code, your first name, please. 469-509, your first name, please.
This Lisa.
Hold on for a minute. Can I have your the initial of your last name, sister?
J.
Okay, Lisa.
J. I'm not sure what number came up for me, but I am in the 469 area code.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, Lisa Jackson.
Yep.
Oh, okay, sister. All right, cool. Let's see here. Caller from 872 area code. Your first name, please. Caller from 872-228, your first name, please.
Kenneth.
Kenneth. Okay, Brother Kenneth. Hold on. Gotcha. Okay. Caller from 929-777, your first name, please. Caller from 929, your first name, please.
Yeah, Avery.
Avery, okay, good, brother. Hold on. Brother Avery. Yep. And caller from 917-858. Your first name, please. Caller, 917-858. Your first name, please. Hello, caller. Okay, caller, we will, yep, the caller left. If we can't get your first name, then you can, then we're unfortunately going to have to drop you from the call. Caller from 317-443, your first name, please.
Carnita.
I'm sorry, sister?
Carnita.
Oh, okay, cool. Sister Carnita. Okay. And caller from 713, caller from 713 area code, your first name, please. Okay, and that caller left as well. All right, and here we go. Brother Richard, you are up. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, hello. Good evening to you. I don't recall your name again. What was your name again?
Brother Lou.
Brother Lou. Okay. Nice to meet you. I just had a couple. I had a few thoughts, just kind of from listening to your introduction and your explanations. I was kind of just taking notes mentally, and kind of wanted to comment on some of the things of, I guess, some of the mission statements that you had. Is that okay? Or
sure.
Okay. So I noticed, because I think some of the things that I took away was wanting to, you know, like we're kind of investing in the generation, you know, in our kids and grandkids' future, which I certainly think is a great thing. And one of the things that I wanted to add to that is to our youth now who are in, you know, elementary, junior high, and high school. I think it's important that we reach them now and find a way to channel them into society, into the middle class. Find ways of encouraging them and targeting them to employment, and that way they can have a say. So I think, like you said, financially, if we don't have a voice, if we don't have any kind of grab in all these, you know, in government and different police departments and unions and all those different entities, if we don't have significant numbers in those things, then it's going to be the challenge to bring about some of these changes are going to be an uphill battle. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. And then, let's see, we talked about, you know, how, or I guess we know that the country really, even though black built this country and has been here since the beginning, along with the Native Americans, it really isn't ours in a sense. But I kind of feel like it's always, you know, when we look on TV and everything we see in culture, it belongs to the Europeans, and that's the way they project it, with their culture, with the flag, with everything that they do. So I think if we can start a way of basically owning it and making it ours, because we have just as much right to it as any other group of people here. And I think we really need to start teaching that to the young kids in school right now, that this is yours. And everything that they say, you know, is part of the American culture on TV, everything that we see growing up, I think we need to change that and make sure that the youth understand that this is theirs as well, just as much as anybody else, if not more. And then another thing, let's see.
Excuse me.
I just think those things are some of the things that we should look at as far as, you know, because like you said, if no one's going to do it for us. And I think we all could agree that reparations are certainly due. When you look at all the other groups of ethnicities who had shortcomings by the way of the government, they were all given reparations, whether it was the Indians, the Japanese, whomever. They were all given reparations, and I just kind of find it mind-boggling how the blacks have not received, or there hasn't been a national conversation, at least in my lifetime, about reparations. So I just kind of wanted to know what your thoughts were on that, and because I think we really got to target these kids now, the ones who are in school now. I think that's the challenge, and I also think that like you said, we're going to be left behind. I kind of feel like we already have been left behind, because if you look at the numbers of blacks who are doing well versus the ones who are not, the numbers are it's just mind-boggling how the numbers are. You know, we go when you see blacks in major populated cities around the country, which is where most blacks reside, and then when you go to the suburbs, you have ones and twos. And I think that's why we have to target these kids in school now and get them to more or less to take the path that is a different path from what they've culturally grown up to know. And I know that's tough, because in those neighborhoods, they don't really see much. You know, all they have is what they have there in front of them, and that's all they know. So I think we really got to get them outside of that, and we really got to change these hiring practices. We know for years that a lot of blacks don't get the opportunity. We got to find some way to change that, because until we can change that, then it's going to be hard for us to get into those other positions. I'm not saying it's going to be impossible, but I think those are some areas that we have to really aggressively target. And that's just kind of what I wanted to. Kind of my thoughts when listening to you, those are some of the things that came to my mind. So
right. So to your point in regards to the children, so this organization stemmed from a nonprofit organization called Wheelchairs Against Guns. What we do at Wheelchairs Against Guns is we go into these schools in the inner city, and we teach these kids about the dangers of bullying, gangs, and gun violence. We have these anti-violence workshops. What we found was, which is some of the things that that I talked about earlier. Their home environment is so is in such a state of turmoil that the things that they learn, or even anything that's positive, it's not going to get that reinforcement. So they'll go to the school, they'll hear us for, you know, so the workshops are like 3 hours or 3 days, right, depending on, you know, what the school needs. But they'll hear this information, but then it's not reinforced at home. And then even at the onset of us launching, we call it WAG, at the onset of WAG, we found that it was hard to get the parents to even care. So it's like you're sending a note home with the parent that says, listen, your child is in your child goes to an at-risk school. So this is in the New York City education system. So your child lives in an at-risk area in a community, and they're going to learn how to deal with the gangs and the guns and the drugs and this, that, and the third. We couldn't get the parents to sign the consent forms to allow the kids to come to the workshops, and then there was no cost, there was nothing. It was like it was just complete disinterest. So trust me, I'm in full 100% agreement that we need to do something. The problem is that we recognize is that you're dealing with so many different types of influences. You're dealing with social media, you're dealing with TV, you're dealing with their community, you're dealing with the lack of reinforcement at home. So the only way that I think that you would really be able to impact those children is if you were able to take them out of some of those environments, and basically you have to mold them, right? You have to get them out of the hood, and you have to take them to a place where they're able to see young black men and women, working together, cooperating, speaking proper English. You understand what I'm saying? Displaying yep. courtesy and things like that. And then that will allow us to, so to your second point, You're talking about shaping career paths. That will allow us to have more influence more influence when we begin to sit down with these children and start talking about shaping their career paths. So,
right.
You said I agree with every single thing you said, brother. I mean, I appreciate you bringing that up. You realize what our challenge is.
Absolutely, because just to add to your point, I'm actually a product of the system. And when I say that, meaning I was raised in foster care, and for me, I was raised in foster care from an early age, before elementary. And my parent, I was taken away from my parents. My dad was fell victim to the cocaine epidemic, which ruined his life. And so I grew up in the foster system. And it, just by the grace of God, that I went from leaving the foster system to eventually making a way for my own life. But it had it not been me making it out of on the LA area that I had grew up in, then I probably wouldn't be here. So it's almost like we got to have safe havens for kids, really. And if the parents can't sign off on it or buy off on it, then that's a huge challenge. And I don't know if we can put pressure on these artists to change what they're projecting the kids as being cool, because it's not cool. I mean, I think that's the huge challenge. Like you said, social media and what these artists are projecting the kids, I mean, it's just not reality. And it's just not reality. And they're doing them a disservice. And until we can get our leaders, or we can get some kind of national stage recognition, and really just push that, because I think it's going to be them that is going to drive the language home, you know?
No, brother. It's going to be us. That's what we're here. That's what we're here to do. We can't work. We can't wait on somebody else, bro. That's another challenge that we face as a people. We're always saying, well, we're looking towards a leader, or we're looking outside of ourselves. Hey, bro, we can do it. We're here. We have 313 people who believe that we can do it, and so you can be the 314th. You know what I'm saying? Like you're right. Saying every single thing that this organization is about. That is exactly what the community resource centers are. The community resource centers are a safe haven. Our way of actually communicating and breaking the chain. So, like I said, we couldn't get buy-in from the parents. A lot of times, parents are like, are you crazy? I got to work. Is my child going to have to stay after? He can't stay after because he has to get home and let his sister in, or he has to watch his sister, or I can't be bothered with that. I got to get a job, and, you know, all of these different things. The plan, so that's why I said we want these, like, large-scale businesses. The plan is to, let's say we have, like, a manufacturing plant, and we're going a little long, because Sister Rhonda and Sister Sarita, I see you guys in the queue.
Okay.
The plan is to, while the parent is working, to have the child at the community resource center. The plan is, when the child is, you know, out wandering the streets, instead he's at the community resource center. Our community resource centers probably will not have basketball courts. They will learn maybe martial arts and, you know, maybe some weightlifting, things like that, so that they can be physical. There will be computer labs, and there will be little training labs. Like, we don't need any more frivolous skills. We need real life skills. And it's essentially like what you're saying. But I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. You know, so we did like a back of the napkin calculation on what something's looking at. One community resource center in some place like Atlanta or Philly or Detroit or whatever, you're talking about an operating budget of about $10 million. We're being very realistic, right? Because all the different things that we need, there will have to be employees. So if we're training people to be carpenters and welders and plumbers, we're going to need a master carpenter, welder, plumber. If this thing is going to be open 24 hours a day, it may need a dorm area. We may need to provide meals for these children. Like, we're dealing with, I'm very in tune with the problems that we face, and I just know that we need to have the money to do it. But we usually try to, you know, I don't want to be rude and cut you off. But I want to let the other people in the queue.
Yeah, that's fine.
You can jump back in
with you as well.
Yeah, you can jump back in if you need to as well. So it's no big deal. I just want to give the brothers and sisters opportunity. All right?
Okay.
All right.
Yep,
thank you, brother.
That worked.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Excuse me. Sister Rhonda. Oh, hold on, Sister Rhonda. We have a few people who have come in on the call, and I want to get their names. Caller from 917-858. Your first name, please. Caller from 917-858. Your first name, please. Caller, if we can't get your first name, then we're going to have to drop you from the call.
Charisma. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, I can. Okay, sister.
Okay. Did you get it?
Hold on. Charisma, is that with a C or a K, or how you spell that?
C. Spelled the right way.
Okay. All right. Yep. Thank you, sister.
You're welcome.
And then, okay, 779, Sister Clarice, is that you?
Yes, yeah, me.
Okay, got you. All right. Okay. And, all right, Sister Shauna, how you doing? Welcome. All right, and I think that is it. Okay, Sister Rhonda. Hello, sister.
Yes. I'd just like to make a statement because you always take the wind out of me. I don't have nothing to say. That's why, you know, you be on top of things. So what can I say? I'd like to really applaud the brother that was talking about how he made it out. It's commendable, but I heard him say things like he didn't hear about reparations. That was because in his age bracket, a lot of things wasn't discussed. Reparations have been discussed, but it's a way you have to go about doing that because contrary to popular belief, black people were here before some Native Americans, and that's another issue. But I want to commend him so much because he is the type of man that would really be, an asset to getting these kids together because while you training them for vocational type things, you need to be training them educationally too. Like he said, he hadn't heard of reparations being discussed. I had heard of reparations being discussed. These are the things that we must start talking to our children about when they're five, when they start going to kindergarten. You tell them these things because so that they won't forget, so that they can pass it on. We have something that they say in African saying, Sankofa, when you go back to bring forward. It's not going back to stay back there. You're going back so that you can get that information to move forward. I commend him so much, and I really wish he would do something, be an asset with the organization, because it seems like he has it together and wants to move forward with the children.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
Great. All right, great. So, Brother Richard, the sister is personally inviting you to become a member, so don't let the sister down. Thank you for that.
Please don't.
Thank you for that, Sister Rhonda.
You're welcome.
And now we have Sister Sarita. Sister Sarita? For all the new callers, if you have a question or a comment, I'm sorry, sister, sorry to cut you off. For all the callers that just came on, if you have a question or a comment about the organization, press star 6 on your phone to get in the queue. Okay, Sister Sarita?
Yes, I actually just have a question. When I looked at the blueprint, I saw the community center, the efforts for the community center, and I understand the financial obligation that they require. But I was wondering, because what you're looking to build, it sounds a lot like Jeffrey Canada's Harlem Children's Zone.
Yep, the Harlem Children's Zone, exactly. Exactly.
So I'm just curious, are you, have you, like, I don't know if we're at, if you're at the level or, you know, how you reach out. But.
Well, the thing, so we had, we tried to reach out to him. We tried to reach out to Jeffrey Canada through his, so the founder of WAG, his sister, she works somewhere, and she's like an administrator or whatever it is, a secretary, something. So we tried to set something up to have a meeting with him. But what we learned about the way he set that up, he had hedge fund investors. He had hedge fund investors. I believe he went to an Ivy League school. So he had like all of the connections to make that happen in some place like New York. And I think it was to the tune of $3 billion or something like that. Right? So it was something crazy. We're not focused on New York, like, right? So could you imagine? So that's just Harlem. That's not even, like, and there's other parts of Harlem. And then, you know, then you have the Bronx, and then you got Brooklyn, and then you got Queens. So New York alone, that would require, you know, multi-billions to do that. So with the way that he did the Harlem Children's Zone, we could probably do like 5 of them in like Philly, probably 10 in Detroit. You understand what I'm saying? 10 in like Atlanta with like that kind of money. So it's definitely doable. And what he did, the kids got in via lottery. But he actually worked with the parents. He provided for the parents. And I mean, it was amazing what he did. And those children were at like the top one percentile or whatever it is of all children, black, Asian, white, whatever. They were at the top in the nation. So so for anyone on the call who isn't familiar with what the sister is talking about, you can Google the Harlem's Children's Zone. The gentleman's name was Jeffrey Canada. I think he retired now. And you guys can get an idea or a vision of exactly what we're talking about doing. He bought up like a whole block.
He brought up several blocks.
He brought a couple of blocks. He did this in New York. He did this in Harlem. And that's when, like, Bill Clinton and them moved up there, and gentrification started getting underway. So he wasn't playing. So that, I'm just letting you guys know, it is possible that black man saved those black children. He's not even from Harlem, if I'm not mistaken. I don't even think he's from Harlem. But his program was so successful, they tried to emulate it in Washington, D.C. and other places as well. I don't know whatever came of them, because it probably required a lot more money than some of these other places were used to. But like I said, what he did was amazing. And you are 100% correct, sister. That is exactly what we're looking to do.
And I'm just curious, okay, one of the things that always stood out to me about the Harlem Children's Zone is the way that he was able to incorporate the parents, because what I think the brother's name was Jeremy, the one that asked the question before. I don't know. I'm not good with names. But that gentleman, it sounds like he's very independently motivated. And a lot of the kids out here that I see and that I know, they don't have that level of, you know, self-built motivation. And it makes sense that they don't, coming from where they come from. So I'm just curious, is there a way to research how he was able to involve the parents in order to drive the lessons home? Because it sounds good, you know, we're all rugged individuals, but we got to get together and kind of make it an overall understanding. So is there a way that you can kind of
absolutely. He had the parents in the auditorium. They were doing the lottery. He was telling the people, hey, listen, this is an opportunity of a lifetime for your child. Your child will come in like this and will come out on the other side like this. Your child will have opportunities. It will be like kind of sort of like a fraternity, like a club. You as the parent, you are expected to do X, Y, Z. If you don't have, I believe if they didn't have medical insurance, if they needed help with their rent, Like, he took care of the parents. He was like, and I expect you to do this. Now, there was, like I said, the founder of Wheelchairs Against Guns, he's from Harlem. There was an incident where there were two neighbors, so they're there with the kids, and one kid got called and not the other one. And so the other one said, oh, you're going to let such and such go to the school without, you know, without the friend? You're going to break them up like that? And the dude, Jeffrey Canada, stood up there and said, listen, you have exactly 30 seconds to make up your mind. You want to stay poor and, you know, have your kid doing whatever, whatever, or you want to take this opportunity to change your child's life, and, you know, you're going to have to just make it up to your neighbor or talk to your neighbor later. He was a little bit more direct with how he was saying it, but I don't want to, like, misquote. And they essentially, that neighbor looked at her girlfriend and was like, no, I'm making this decision for my kid. So I think once we're able to present something viable to these parents, I think that they will come on board.
Good point. Okay, I understand. Thank you.
And our way of taking care of the parents, like I said, is providing these jobs. So it's like you're going in and we're like, hey, listen, right now you may be on social services, you're doing XYZ. We have a job for you. We want to pay you a living wage. We want to pay 15, 18, 20, whatever, you know, whatever the wages are, whatever we can afford. But we want to pay you a living wage. And in the meanwhile, we are going to provide, quote unquote, free child care, because we want the babies. That's the overall goal.
We want the babies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Sister Rhonda. Yep, sister.
I just wanted to make a brief comment. I am like a product of that Hard U Act. It was Hard U Act when I was coming through, which was Harlem Youth Act. And they took out kids from the public schools, and we had to go every Saturday. And I think when you just said that, it just brought back to mind how they took certain kids out. I don't think that should be now, because the dynamics were different back then. And what they took out the children that they thought that, I don't like to use this term, were gifted, because I'm just a nobody. But the thing is that we were to come back and help the other kids in our community. And then we went to integrate the schools in Queens. So that Harlem Youth Zone was like something off of that Hard U Act, which I think came from the government, that we were like an experiment, I think, at that time.
Okay. Okay. Well, he figured out a formula, and it worked.
He certainly did. I mean, and he really expounded on it, because as the dynamics of the community changed when the gentrification occurred, because we grew up with Spanish, whites, Jamaicans, everybody in the community, but as people started moving out, the drugs came in and whatnot. He did, I mean, it was lovely. I mean, you couldn't ask for somebody that would do something with these kids that would go through the problems. He did excellent.
Okay, great. Yeah, I mean, like I said, we have to put forth that first proof element. We've been racking our brains thinking of something that we could do now. Everything takes money, but, you know, I had made a post on a Facebook page, this was a few weeks back, and it was like some young guys that just, you know, no one told them to do it. They just started cleaning up their neighborhood. They brought their own garbage bags, and they went around and they started cleaning up their neighborhood. And then so this guy stopped and interviewed them and asked them why they did it. He's like, yo, we just tired of it looking like that. So there definitely is some hope. There definitely are some children. It's not like you're saying, so you said gifted. But it's always easier to work with those who are motivated. So it's even like with this organization, even with trying to do what we're doing, we're going to, you know, the 2,000 founding members, those are going to be the brothers and sisters who are motivated to act. Those are people who want to do something now. Not everyone is going to want to do something. They're going to need more proof. They're going to, we got to catch them right. It's going to be the same thing with these parents when we go and we open up these community resource centers. It's going to be the same thing with these children when we go and we offer them these opportunities. A lot of these children are, I mean, hard-headed right now. They have no respect for teachers, for the principals, no authority figures, their parents, nothing. I'm a grown man. I'm 42 years old. I still don't curse in front of my parents. You know what I mean? I don't drink, you know, I don't drink and smoke anymore anyway, but I never did any of that stuff in front of my parents.
Wow.
And these children, they growing up with compromised morals and compromised respect. As the brother said, the crack epidemic affected, it really decimated our culture, our people. And that played a big factor. So, we need to figure out a way to do something now, something where we can have a quick win. I don't know if a bunch of people want to run around and start cleaning up with bags. I mean, it could work. But I was thinking that one of the first things before we actually build a community resource center, we need to have, like, recruitment places to get a lot of these young boys off the street and teach them how to drive trucks. Put them on the road and let them be over the road truck. Let them see the country. Get out of the hood. Get out of trouble and go make you some money. And that wouldn't take nearly as much money as we would need for one of the community resource centers. That would just basically be an office and like some kind of relationship with one of these truck driving schools. So I'm like looking into something like that now. We have another member, Brother Ben. He was saying that he has some sales jobs available for some brothers. I don't know if they're going to want to do that, though, because it's commission-based. But it's like we need to figure out something now, before we get to the 1 million members or whatever it is. And, if anyone has any suggestions or anything like that, we would love to hear it. Something that, you guys may be doing in your community. Press *6 to get in the queue. Sister Ron, do you have anything else that you would like to contribute in closing?
No, I would just like to say, I did a 21st century program in another state, and what we would do, and this just goes to the people that you're dealing with, which I understand that, we would make the not make them, but we would suggest to them that they, it took a lot, but we would suggest to them that they would have to come into the center with their children. Some of them did work, but for some of them that didn't, the parent substitute would be there and fill in the parent that had to work. It worked like a buddy system. So that there was always somebody in that community that could tell the parent, well, such and such went on with your child, this and that, X, Y, Z. But we had an adult in the community center. Sometimes we even had sleepovers with the adults there so that they could get a connection going, because with kids going to school, parents working or whatever, people coming home trying to just maintain for that day, it just to be a little hectic. So we have to come up with creative ways to kind of get that connection for the community. That's it.
It's crazy you said that. Last week, I don't know if you remember, we had that brother Daoud on the call. He was the psychologist.
Yes.
Right. I spoke with him behind the scenes. So now, a lot of times, people say we need to learn our history. We need to know our history. When people say that, I'm lost. I'm like, okay, cool, because I know like a lot of facets to our history. But I'm like, all right, and so what does that do for me now, right? Because as most people don't know, but Africa is made of 54 different countries, and within each of those countries, there are different tribes. all of those right. individual little tribes have different cultures and different mannerisms right. and all this other stuff. So my thing was, I don't even know exactly what, well, actually I do, now I kind of have like a roundabout idea, but it's like, I don't know exactly where I'm from in Africa and then which tribe. So I may be learning about African culture, but that's not my culture. So, but what the brother told me, he was saying traditional African culture, all of it, was the concept of it takes a village. He was like, they understood that it's going to be hard on one parent. They understand that sometimes, right. hey, you have a bad day, and they had the thing where the parent, where the kids were kind of like group raised. You know, there were.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. There were a group of parents raising a group of kids. They rotated, mm-hmm. and then as the boys, you know, became a certain age, they went off with the men, and the mothers and the daughters mm-hmm. went off to do this, and they learned that same cultural, you know, they learned that same cultural practice. The way that I grew up right. with my grandmother and my aunts and my uncles and all of us. You know, we all lived, you know, this is when we lived in the projects, but I lived with my family, my extended family, and so there was always someone there to watch the kids, someone
right.
there to feed the kids and things like that. And I think that's something that you, like you said, we need to go back to that. We need, I think the brother called it a cultural lobotomy. So we need to pull out like this bad culture that we have, this right. European culture that we have adopted, mm-hmm. and we need to go back to our roots in regards
exactly.
to taking a village.
I agree so much, and there is a state, Hawaii, just to say this, because they had flew us somewhere to speak to people a while ago in D.C., and there was a lady there from Hawaii, and in Hawaii, they didn't have needs for jails or whatever. Just like in Africa, in the old Africa, they didn't have jails or whatever, because there was somebody always there to watch that kid from getting, you know, things are going to happen, that's not 100%, but there was somebody there to say, no, you're not going to do this, you come in here, I'm going to feed you till your mom get home or your dad get home. They didn't have that in Hawaii either until the Europeans. That's why we must teach our children our culture. Our culture is much different from what, you know, the Europeans have imposed. And it's not a prejudicial thing. It's a thing because we are people that don't, I don't know why. We love people. Even though they kick us around, we still try to get along with everybody. But people will say that, no, it's no. This has went on for too long and at the destruction of our race. And I'm just happy that you're bringing this stuff out, because I really think, you know, it's time, it's overdue, and it's just not a lot of talking. We have to have action, because we're losing a lot of kids. I know when I was teaching those kids in that other state, there was a group of kids that the school had labeled throwaway kids. And these kids are 28 now, 29. And when I left away from there, they was like, Miss Rhonda, I said, I got to go back home. I wish I could stay, but it was difficult. Some of the judges have even tried to put the school teachers in jail down there because they had this service. A group of children. What are those children becoming now? They're on the street. That's the same kids you see that don't have manners, that won't say, Miss Susie, you need help with your bag without hitting her in the head. Those are the same kids you see because they were not educated and they did not have that base.
Right. I'm 100% in agreement with you. We're in a different time, and that's essentially what it is. And mm-hmm. so we need to figure out a way to get back, and we need to figure out a way to reach these children, even if their parents aren't going to, you know, so we have to reach them when their parents aren't, basically.
Right.
All right. So thank you, Sister Rhonda.
You're welcome, Brother Luke.
Okay. And so if no one else has any other questions in regards to or in comments in regards to what we were just discussing, one of the things that I wanted to bring to the floor was, and actually the sister just touched on it, so this provides a great segue. It's the poor behavior that we are displaying today. And, like, so is that really an after effect of slavery? And if it is, how much longer do we attribute that to the poor behavior? How much longer do we excuse that? Because at some point in time, we're going to have to be accountable. There's going to have to be a degree of responsibility, and someone is going to have to do it. So if anyone has any insight in regards to that or want to comment on that topic, press star 6 in the queue. So essentially what we're saying is, so we know that we have a lot of ill behavior going on in the black community, especially, you know, with the male-female dynamic, in regards to men being responsible with their, you know, with their children, those responsibilities, protecting our women, you know, all these other things, teaching the children. And then, you know, when we say, oh, okay, well, you know, we've been slaves for 500 years and we had Jim Crow and we had this and, you know, all of these other things. And I'm like, hey, man, when is enough going to be, like, when you can't use that as an excuse anymore? Because it doesn't matter. Right? So if that is the cause, yes, okay. But at some point in time, we got to get down to business. So we got a couple of brothers in the queue, Brother Rich, Brother Ken, and Brother Ron. Brother Richard.
Hey, it's me again, Brother Richard. Just wanted to add to your so as far as the effects of slavery on the behavior, it's all relative, and it's not only the effects of slavery, but as we know, the systemic racism that followed, from the time slavery was ended on paper up until now. So we know that, and I think as a community, we're aware of that. So I think now, it's hard to say, because I know it depends on the background and upbringing of individuals. But I would say the time is now where the excuse for the behavior is over, because we know the history. So we have to change the way we think, and we have to accept what has taken place, and we have to find a way to move forward like we always have. But I think as far as the behavior, and that's kind of why I touched on the culture that we see portrayed by entertainers. And I think, and I know you said it's us to make the change, us as in the group and this particular movement. But I say, yes, that's our responsibility. But I think we still lean heavily on, as much as we can, leverage on these entertainers. And you know, we need to try and find mentorship, like you're mentioning, in the community. I know that, you know, when you have community centers, there's a lot of moving pieces that go with that, and there's a lot of funding. You have to have employees, you have to have insurance, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, is there a more non-formal way to reach out? Because, some people need babysitting 24/7, and that's unfortunately a reality. And I think a way you change, I think another sister mentioned it. She said that, how do you motivate these kids? And honestly, everyone's motivated by something different. Some people are motivated by fear. Some people are motivated by you showing them something. For me, when I was coming up, it was me seeing nice things. And it wasn't until I moved out of the urban area where I was exposed to nice things and I saw those things, and that's what I wanted. And that's what drove me. But I think if we can shift away from the effects of slavery into, in spite of slavery, look at the things that we have done. Because Dr. Cornel West talks about, when he talks about, he has a sermon that he did a few years back, and it was called, what was it called? The Gift of Black Folks, I think it was in the 21st century, and he talked about, in spite of slavery, look at the people that we produced. And he goes on to name a handful of prophetic individuals, people who had and some of the artists of that time that produced music and language of love and respect and dignity and moving forward. So I think if that is a huge thing that you just touched on, the effects of slavery. We have to change it from how it affected us negatively and try and fight against it to how we're going to better ourselves. And that's really all I had on that.
You're spot on, brother. Once again, thank you so much. All right. Brother,
absolutely.
Brother Kim, sorry about that, brother. Cut you off a little quick there. Brother Ken.
Thank you, Brother Lou. Everything I've heard tonight has been fantastic. And just in short, to address the issue of training and research and resources, we do have to change. It only takes a single line of code in our DNA to determine certain traits. And although slavery may have been some time ago, there are still residual effects. However, as you stated, we must initiate the changes necessary to make these adjustments in our culture, thereby taking actions and supporting our community, providing the things that you said that this initiative is designed to create is essential. But it only takes a village elders all form one particular nuance in each community, and the multitude create the plethora of opportunities. So if you just have each individual take their place, share their skill, their wisdom, and give to the community will benefit. And just like anything else, there are some that will come to it immediately wanting help. Some will shun. Work with the ones that want the help. Eventually the others will see the benefit and come along. You can reach out. I operate a not-for-profit organization. We do violence prevention, and we work with parents. And to your point earlier, I found it humorous. Yes, you can't get parents to sign forms that are beneficial for their children. That's unfortunate, but it does happen. So all of our programming with youth is worked in conjunction with the parents. You have to have the parents along with it in order to really work with the youth. So we can reach out. We've got free after-school programs simply by asking. A number of vendors say no, but a lot of them say yes. So if you put it out there, there are people that will help and make assistance to your programs in these various communities for things for students after school. It's essential. The statistics on violence between after-school hours till 7 p.m., those are the heightened hours, so we have to have activities for youth during that time. Parents have to have employment. These are essential things. You have to have good places to live. These are the things that they desire and will benefit them. So sometimes it only takes reaching out. We don't want to always look to the dollars because we don't always have them, but the problem will still exist. But there are people out there that do have the resources, so it just takes someone to find out, outreach, make some phone calls, send some emails, do some internet searches, find out what's available, and provide those resources to the community. Everything you're doing here is fantastic. I appreciate you and everyone that took the time to be on the call here this evening. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brother Verrick. Thank you for your kind words. Brother Ron and then Brother Rod. Brother Ron?
How you doing, brother? Can you hear me?
Peace. Yes, I can.
A lot of it, I think, is accountability. Like, a lot of these kids, I mean, we can all fall back to slavery, but like, well, you know what, I'm doing this because my ancestors went to this, so some people feel like, you know, I shouldn't have to do this in this world, or this world owes me this. I realize the world's not going to give us anything. And I've done a multitude, like, as you know, of first world things in my life, but I take full accountability of it. And that's what these people are not doing. It's like these kids, talking to these kids now, it's hard. And we can blame the parents, and we can blame, like, a whole multitude of things, but we got to talk to these kids. Like, these kids, they're really disrespectful, like you said earlier, and everyone eggs them on. So their whole generation eggs them on to do stupid stuff. So we got to find some kind of way to get them to be accountable for what they do. Like, and realize there's consequence, because when they get their consequence, it's usually too late. They're in a jail cell, or God forbid, they're dead, and then it's too late. So we need to find some kind of way to get these kids to think. And I don't understand, like these celebrities are not going to do it, so they do what they want to do because they're making their money. And this is what these kids are looking up to. So I'm going to act ratchet, I'm going to act this way, and that's what I'm going to get. And I just don't understand, like, the lack of accountability that kids and adults have nowadays. It makes no sense to me. So I don't know how we're going to get past this, but we got to come up with something. And I don't know. I'm open to suggestions. I talk to kids all the time. I talk to young guys all the time. I was on a train one time, two young black girls on the train talking loud. And the one girl says, you know, I can't wait till I'm 18 so I can get up on mother's budget and get my own welfare. Like, these are her dreams. Like, that broke my heart. I'm like, wow, like, this is what our kids are looking forward to. This is her aspiration right here, to get her own welfare. Like, I don't understand, brother. It's crazy out here, and I don't know what we can do to change, but we got to keep trying. Like, I talk to kids all the time, young kids, young men, young women. I talk to them all the time, look, this job, take this test, do this, do that. I talk to them, and I guess that's all we can do, because I figure if I talk to 1,000 people about something and one of them follows through, I feel like I accomplished something. So we all got to just talk to these kids and talk to these young adults until we're blue in the face. And hopefully we can reach one, and maybe they can talk to 1,000 people, and they can reach one, and it can go on like that.
Well, I mean, like I said, so all right. So what happens right now when we all reach out individually to these children, to these parents? We really, most of the time, we don't have the power to change their current situation. We don't have the power to stop whatever pain or confusion or whatever it is that they're suffering at that current time. And so that's why the organization is set up. That's why I'm looking at it the way how I'm looking at it, and why I'm saying that we want to do this thing for real. When we tell these kids, so we have to start with the parents. When we tell these parents, listen, this is what you need to be doing for little Bobby or whatever this little dude's name is, we got a job for you. Here's a job where you can come and work. Now, while you're at work, you don't have to worry about a babysitter. Here's a community resource center. Send him here. And while he's there, here's the thing, right? When kids get into like an environment where other kids are like, more, for lack of a better word, falling in line, they fall in line too. And then and part of my thing, so like I said, we're not going to have like basketball courts or anything at this thing. We're going to have like martial arts. The reason why I'm saying that is because the dudes can sneak in little punches and little chops, man. Keep them little dudes in line, because realistically, that's what it's gonna take. So flip this little dude on his head. You know what I mean? He heard he's acting up in the class. You know, the math teacher, he's getting out of line. So when he goes to martial arts, guess what? He's getting flipped on a mat 1,000 times. You know, something crazy like that. So. That's the outlook. That's the plan. Because no one wants to. And I'm thinking about like when I was young, you couldn't talk to me. I thought I knew everything. It's for everyone who's young, especially when you get of that age when you leave out of your mother's house or your father's house or whatever it is. No one can talk to you. So we either have to catch them. We have to catch them before. If we have to catch them after, there a lot of times, man, a lot of our brothers are like really defeated and broken, and so then now we're dealing with a whole lot of other stuff. And I'm being honest with you, I don't think I want to take on that challenge too. I rather work on the babies and their mothers, because we know that the mother will do whatever she needs to do to protect. Oh, I didn't mention this. For the guest on the call, but the members know this. Our other priority is to work with men who are the heads of their households, who are struggling though, right? So if you're a man and you are taking your responsibility, you're doing what you're doing, but you're underemployed, then this organization wants to help you, and that's why I was saying some of these job training opportunities and things, so brothers can go on and make more money and be able to provide a better home environment for their kids. So we have like a three-prong approach to how we're going to do it. But you know, when I come to the bottom line, man, it all boils down to we're going to need the money to run this type of operation. So, do you have anything you want to add in conclusion, brother?
No. I just want to, speak my piece a little bit. But, I agree with you 100%. We catch them young, we have a chance. All right, thank you, Brother Lou.
Thank you so much, Brother Ron. Brother Rob, you're live. Good brother. Brother Rodney? I don't know. Brother, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry, I had my phone on mute.
Okay.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Good evening, everybody. Glad to be here. Glad to hear solutions flying around rather than complaints about problems, first of all. I'm going to be brief. Trying to stick with what you were talking about, at what point do we begin to take accountability for ourselves? I was just talking to my brother about this just the other day, because we're always going back and forth about all this stuff. and he's more set on the, I think, well, let me just say this. I think we need to distinguish who's who. Like, it's just going to be a fact. You're going to have those who are just going to continue to blame and expect an apology that we're never going to get, expect, reparations, and, you're just going to have those people. You're just going to have them. But then you're going to have those who say, we need to just take our destiny into our own hands and come together and do whatever needs to be done, whether it's 100 of us or 1,000 of us or a million of us. So at some point, enough of us just have to come together and make something happen, and just not worry about the rest and just let the proof be in the pudding. Because that's what we are as a people. We want to see it first. That's why we fall for so much stuff, because something looks like something.
We
think that it's going to be gold. And then once we actually get sucked into it, we find out, it's fool's gold. But as far as, you're talking about the babies, we got to get a hold of them in, like, first and second grade, invade the schools, and stick with some of them. I look at it like this. I'm a person that thinks about, just starting out small. So, like, since you're the person who, came up with this and you're in New York, my suggestion would be a way to really get things going. I figure you plan on start doing things at home anyway, but just what if we just have laser beam focus on just something, some project or something you can get going there with whatever help you have, and just really just work it, even though it's not something big, but just work it real good and document everything that's being done, and then use that as part of, presentation, and have it modeled to where we can start one somewhere else,
Well,
out here from everywhere.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And it was something we had discussed this some months back. So like I said, this organization stemmed from WAG, Wheelchairs Against Guns. So we are already doing that. The reason why I didn't want to stick with like saying that New York is a state, the city of New York. New York has tons of resources. So it's not like some of like these other cities and some of these other places. New York just has money coming out the freaking wazoo. So we're saying this, and we have the programs, but with New York, there's so much bureaucracy and so much. It's just so much you have to go through to do every single little thing because they have a program. They have a law. They have a this for all of that. But that's because almost every single thing is attached with money. So now, so we figured out a solution. So like we said, it's hard to get these parents into to sign off on these slips and things like that. So what we started doing is we started going into these suspension sites. These are kids who are there for behavioral issues. Guess what? The workshops and things like that now is just mandatory. It's part of the curriculum. You got in trouble. Now you have to learn this stuff. And there's so many suspension sites. We're not having that. But a lot of other places in this country don't really have those types of resources. And to be honest with you, so let's just take like what's going on in Chicago. That, all right, so that's like in, I don't know, maybe the south and the west side of Chicago. That actually, like, it like paints all of us with that same brush. That violence that's going on in Chicago, that affects all of us everywhere. All of us everywhere. So it's like, we really have to make like a serious change. The other thing is, it will be cheaper, like you said, just laser beam focused on one specific area. It would be cheaper to, and probably easier to do something like this in like Detroit or Atlanta or, you know, Philly or something like that. One of these places where there isn't so much bureaucracy, and where where a dollar goes much further. Because if
I'm just saying it for the purposes, and I say it at home just because you're there, but the premise of the thought is just simply that it could be anywhere. Let's just have something in hand that we can show.
But you know what it's going to take, right? You know what it's going to boil down to, right?
You got to boil down to money.
Okay, and once you get there, so you're a member, right, brother?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This weekend, when I post the revenue numbers, you look at that and you'll see what we're talking about. Because if you're saying let's go into another place or whatever it is, it's going to take resources. We take resources away from the organization. Maybe next week we have no guests on a call. Maybe we have no new members or whatever it is, and then we lose members. So we gotta keep feeding the machine, So this is it's like a balancing act, and it's like I said at the beginning of the call, you know, we're trying to do something that has never been done. There's gonna be growing pains. That's where we are right now. We're in a growing process. We're in a sorting process, and I was getting a little dejected like the past couple of weeks, like, yo, man, you got to be kidding me. Like, what's going on with it? But you know what? I'm actually glad we're here, because when we started off, I mean, a few months ago, and you can go in the members area and listen to like those first calls. There was, you know, it was like a few of us and we were all sitting around like, hey, OK, so what about this? Now we're here to the point where we can be discussing some of these things, where we have enough people on the calls, where things can, the ball can start rolling. We have, enough members who are thinking of like doing something locally, and then we have other people who are thinking of doing other things. So these are actually good problems to have. Once we figure out how all of this stuff will work, once we put, like I said, that first proof element together, and I think one of the cheapest things that we would do, aside from like the Black Wall Street Project, would be like just signing these little dudes up, man, and helping them get their CDLs, or sending them, well, not because they're not even trade school, because trade schools is probably going to come with like some overhead or whatever. But taking these little dudes off the street and helping them get their CDL and sending them on the road, that will solve two problems. One, they get some money in their pocket. Two, they get out of the hood. So then, what does that result in? That results in less crime, or results in them not becoming a victim. So that's something that I've been really, really thinking about. But even still, you know, we're going to need money to cover the rent, the office, setting that up. Who's going to man that, right? So something like that probably wouldn't work in New York. we will probably have to go to one of these other states, you know, where it would be cheaper and, you know, feasible to do that. So at our next members call, brother, you know, or you can just call me direct, man. We can, you know, we can brainstorm.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, brother. Sister Rhonda.
It's just a statement. I was thinking about something. In these community rooms, when we used to do this in the community room, we would take the children's cell phones and everything. We would. There was no TV on because you have to have quiet in order to think, in order to get stuff in that brain. We are too social media nowadays. And the kids sometimes, that's their babysitter sometimes when the parent working or whatever. So we would take their, you know, cell phones, and somebody would have them if the phone rang, if it was their mom or whatever, something was going on, if it was an emergency, we could monitor that. But the thing is, we have to transcend humanity. We're moving toward where people don't feel nothing. I'm just going to do this, and I'm going to do it, and I don't care what you say and how you doing it, and I don't want to hear nothing. That's it. That's not, we have to get back to the humanity. Social media is fine for one thing, but it doesn't give us these emotions that we were born with, that we need to interact with when we interact with other people. So we wouldn't have no TV. We would maybe have one TV, but we would have a movie night. And after that movie night, the TV would get rolled out in another room, and we'd lock it away, and we would just talk. I mean, I grew up with all my uncles and my aunt, everybody in the house, my grandmother, my mom and dad, whatnot. And we had the time. We just talked. It was not too much going on. I mean, in the community where people just didn't, we had neighbors we would go to and whatnot, but on the average, we didn't have all this fast-paced stuff, and the drugs too, like you said. But as far as the other components, socials, media, it just blows it out of proportion for the younger kids now, I think. And we just lost, you know, human touch. We pick up the phone and we call our aunt. I'm like, yeah, how you doing? Okay, good. Okay, I'll talk to you next week. We don't see that person. We him. It's not like you're right there. We don't have a connection. And sometimes when you lose the connection, you lose the meaning of why you're being. And we just got to get back to the basics to whatever. We got to get back to the basics without going back to the basics, if you can understand what I'm saying, if it sounds logical.
No, I agree. I mean, you just reiterated exactly what it is that we need. So maybe when most of us were growing up, at the time, maybe we didn't think it was the best, but we see that some of the things that were imposed upon us, you know, chores and other things that required personal responsibility, those things worked out for the best for us. So I'm in total agreement. I'm in total agreement.
Okay, that's it for me. That's all.
All right. Thank you, sister. All right, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, these calls usually wrap up around about 11. We are at 10:48, so we got about 10 minutes left. If no one has anything else that they want to contribute, I will end the call. I got to get my kids ready for school tomorrow and stuff. So if no one has anything else, like I said, press star 6. You know, and before we go, I just want to just say, so I want to thank everyone. I want to thank all the members for attending, and I want to thank all the guests for on the call. These town hall meetings, this pretty much sums up like the kind of topics, the type of things that we talk about. There's a million different ways to fix these problems, but you know what everyone can understand is that the bottom line is that it's going to take money before we do something. So if you are at that point in your life where you're just tired of talking and you want to do something, I want to personally invite you to become a member today. You can dip your toe in the water, feel us out, become a silver member, you know, or if you're, you know, if you're a little bit more, you know, committed or whatever, you can become a golden ambassador or platinum champion at the $25 and $50 levels. Every little bit helps push us forward. And at the very least, you can, you know, like I said earlier, we just put a link on the site where you could make like a one-time contribution if you're so inclined. And that could be whatever denomination you feel, because every little bit helps push us forward. But we would really appreciate you becoming a member, because as the brother said earlier, and I actually included that on my notes, we need elders. That's what we used to have in a community. And so that's what becoming a founder member is essentially going to be. You would become an elder. Having worded it properly, next week you come on the call, when I say it, it's going to flow really smoothly. But that's essentially what it needs to be. We need to become the elders, right? So the brother Ron said it's a matter of personal responsibility. It is. It is our responsibility to actually do something. What are we actually leaving for the next generation? That's our responsibility. It is the prior generation's responsibility to leave something for the future generation. You know, like I said, I'm 42. When I got into my 40s, I really start having these questions like, well, what is the meaning of life? Like all of those kinds of questions. I had stopped the partying and all that other stuff, right? So I, you know, I did that to death, and I was bored with it. And I'm saying, well, you know, chasing money, you know, and that's always been a big thing for me. But I was like, but like at the end of the day, what are you doing it for? And it was like, it's family and it's posterity and it's legacy. You want to live forever. And that's how you, this is how you live forever. You leave a legacy. You do something that's bigger than yourself. If you listen to some of the great people, you know, look at some of the great people in our history, they did that unselflessly. So you got Malcolm and Martin and W.E.B. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey and all of these people. These are men and women, Harriet Tubman and things like that. These are men and women who said that, I'm going to live not only for me, I'm going to live for the next generation as well. And that's exactly what it's going to require. So, you know, like I said, become a member. You know, if your pockets aren't looking like that, or you're not all the way, you know, convinced yet, and you want to attend a few more town halls, you need to go back and watch the blueprint, then you can do that. Or at the very least, you can go on our Facebook page. You can like, share, and comment anything that resonates with you. We have some things on there that may be ratchet, maybe some things that you don't agree with. You know, whatever it is, find the stuff that resonates with you. I told some guy today earlier, I'm no longer interested in points of division. I don't care. I don't care if it's the Muslim and the Islam and the Christian and this, I don't care. If you're black or if you're a person of color and you care about doing something for the next generation of people of color, then that is what, you know, that's all I want to know, and we want to work with you. Sister Clarice, hold on. Yes, sister.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to add to what Brother Lou was saying. And really answer the question that you posed before you gave the conclusion to the night, that when do we stop blaming it on slavery and all of that stuff? So we stop blaming it on slavery when we become aware of the information of that would link it to where we came from. Well, not where we came from, but where the situation originated from. And once we can link it to that, once we're exposed to that information, that's when we can stop. And my belief is you want to be around people who inspire you to be better, who inspire you to grow, and that's what this organization is. We want you. This is a good call. I was listening. I came in kind of late, but from what I heard, very constructive, very good ideas, good conversation. All of that is what Black Wallets Matter is about. It's about building. It's about sustaining. It's about getting there together. So we do. We want you. We need you. And like Brother Lou said, please watch the blueprint because he's very open. This is a very open forum, open to ideas, and we can use all good ideas because, like I said, greatness inspires greatness, and we can get that together. So that's all I have to say. And
thank you so much, Sister Clarice. Thank you. All right, brothers and sisters, I am going to we're going to wrap this up. With 6 minutes to go, so this might have been one of our earliest, fastest ones. But as the sister said, it was very productive, great conversation, and I want to thank you all. Good night. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Take care. Nice meeting you guys. Take care.
Likewise.
Good night.
Good night.